Radio.
Sanctifying Your Work, a talk by Chris Karen at the Finding Your Calcutta Retreat.
Christy, can we lock the doors? Strap yourselves in. We're going to be talking about Opus Dei. Right. The Da Vinci Code. Hands up. Who's read The Da Vinci Code? No? Yes, I can kill you with that finger. I'm not going to go into a lot of serious sort of theology about Opus Dei spirituality. Basically, I'm going to bore you a little bit with my life story, and then because I think it gives you an idea of how things work in practice, and then I'll talk a little bit about Opus Dei in particular and, you know, the spirit. You know, as a teenager, I'm not a teenager anymore, but as a teenager, I sort of felt that, you know, I've got 80 years of my life, and what am I going to do with this, you know? And I was a little bit concerned, being half German and thinking ahead, that, you know, I didn't want to get it wrong, you know? I didn't want to wake up at 45 with 2.3 kids, a mortgage in the suburbs, a boring desk job, and then going, hang on a minute, how did this happen? Because this wasn't supposed to be the way my life was supposed to turn out, right? This may be a little bit familiar because in talking to people over the years, you sort of have the same feeling that there is inculcated in people an idea that, hey, I'm destined for something a little bit special, you know? Not me in particular, but just people generally, you know? Each person has a vocation, right? So, I was a bit worried about this, and I was thinking, well, what am I going to do? I need to take steps to ensure that this doesn't creep up on me. In the 80s, I was a teenager, and Talking Heads was a big band. Many of you probably haven't even heard of Talking Heads, but they had a song called Letting the Days Go By, and that just reinforced my paranoia, that somehow this would happen, that I'd wake up and think, what have I done with my life? And so, you know, I'd always practice as a Catholic and then thinking about what I was going to do, work-wise, university, etc., etc. I was sort of thinking, maybe I should be outside because things happen outside, you know? If I get stuck behind a desk somewhere shuffling papers, well, what happens in an office? It's just a boring office job. So I thought, I'll work outside, that'll be good. I'll experience life more fully, you know, it won't be wasted. I was heavily influenced by beer ad at the time. It was on the television, on high rotation. It was a helicopter flying over a beach, sort of like the one just down the river. And as it came across a headland, there were two men on the headland looking through a theodolite and with a sort of reflector. And they were waving sort of madly at this helicopter as it sort of flew over, and sort of the beer ad came on, Foster's, I think it was. And I thought, I'll do surveying. So that looks like a fun job. It gets better. And so I thought, well, I grew up in Canberra, so I thought I've got to go to New South Wales Uni because that was one of the places you could go to study. And so I arrived at New South Wales Uni and I needed somewhere to live, right? And sort of being a Catholic, the sort of default was Rain College, it was sort of the Catholic college there. And that's how I actually met Opus Dei. I actually don't work as a surveyor. I never worked as a surveyor. It's just one of those things that God leads you down a particular path and, you know, one thing leads to another. Having sort of come to Sydney, I was still sort of searching around a bit and looking at different things. And, I joined St. Vincent de Paul for about a couple of years in their Redfern conference, and that was interesting. And then I was an acolyte for a year or two, and that was interesting. But none of these things quite sort of, you know, made me feel that I was really connecting with God. You know, I was sort of there, you know, doing things, good things, but not really sort of satisfying myself. In time, living in Rain's run by Opus Dei, I began to meet more and more people who were in Opus Dei. And I noticed that a little bit different, not in the sense they had two heads, but in the sense that they're very cheerful people, always, and they're really well-rounded people. They were just sort of good at a lot of things, you know, unusually so, it seemed. And so I began to sort of learn more and more and eventually join. So basically, Opus Dei, it's a lay spirituality as opposed to a spirituality for lay people. Okay, I don't like the idea of a spirituality for lay people because it sort of connotes an inferiority, that there's proper spirituality for priests and religious, and then there's spirituality for lay people, which is like the junior school spirituality, and you never really quite get out of the paddle pool, you know? And that's not the case. I mean, the Second Vatican Council's clearly now taught that every single person in this room is supposed to be canonized, or be able to be canonized, to be canonizable when they die. Now, we can't afford to canonize everyone in this room. It costs a bit of money. You've got to do a lot of research. You've got to get the doctors, you know, to do the miracles, all the rest of it. But every single person here in this room should be canonized. You should have your own prayer card that people are praying with your picture on it, that people pray to when you die, right? That's what the church teaches, okay? So, now, that's a bit of a revolution in the sense that in the early church, this idea of the importance of lay people and the centrality of lay people in church life was pretty much a given, okay? And the early church fathers, all up to John Chrysostom, wrote about this, right? There was nothing controversial. It was just entirely natural that lay people are supposed to be saints. In time, what happened was monasticism developed. Monasticism is a fantastic thing. But it developed, and then the sort of idea came across that, well, if you want to be serious about your faith, well, you've got to leave the world, because the world is full of distractions. It's full of interruptions. It's full of daytime television and crappy radio and reality TV and all that sort of stuff that sort of is just like heroin, you know, like you just, it's like a car crash. You've just got to see it. And so the world is full of those things. You need to get away from those things because that distracts you from having an interior life. And then over time it became an idea that lay people are about praying, paying and obeying. Okay, that's what they're there for. They're there to have babies so that the church goes on. And no one really, you're not going to find a lay person couldn't seriously write a serious book on the interior life, on prayer, because how can that happen when they're just in the middle of the world? So let's talk a couple of things in terms of why that's not correct. And the real world, in terms of the way lay people live, is full of the social life, your family life, your professional life. Okay, all of these things, everyone has these things that are milling around. And I'm going to talk in particular about work, but Opus Dei is about sanctifying all of those things, okay? It's about turning all of those things into prayer, okay? It's about when your girlfriend, boyfriend, whatever, does that really annoying thing that you hate, it's about being mortified and offering that up. That little bit of suffering, when he or she does that thing, offering that up to God so that that person comes closer to God. And ultimately in marriage, your husband or your wife becomes your path to sanctity. That person is the key to your sanctity because that's the person who's going to bring you to heaven. Okay? Now, turning a bit more on work, everyone has to work. And it's not like being at home looking after kids is not work. That's work. If you're unemployed and you're looking for work, the work of finding a job is also work, you see? So everything has a work context in it. Man is called to work, okay? Genesis 2:2, God worked to create creation. Genesis 2:15, man is called to work. Then you have the fall. Work is not about a punishment for original sin. Original sin is like coming after that. Before original sin, we were always supposed to work. Original sin just made that work a little bit difficult to do. Okay? So that's the first thing. When Jesus came on earth, he worked for 20 years as a carpenter. And his father, Joseph, taught him how to be a carpenter. Like 20 years of working. That tells you something about what God is telling us about work. Everyone has to do it. It's a noble thing. It's a thing we need to use to sanctify ourselves. That's something that is a difficult idea, and for a range of reasons I've already sort of pointed out. One of the other issues is that there's sort of Protestant idea that, although it's not a Catholic idea, sometimes Protestant ideas can infect a little bit the way the church teaches. And the idea that that original sin is so corruptive that it affects every human action, so that human actions can't have any redemptive value, even when done by a person in a state of grace. Okay? And that's just wrong. Okay? So let's talk about sanctification of work. Now, obviously, the work that you're looking to sanctify needs to be... I've got these pages all over the place. The work you sanctify needs to be legitimate work, okay? Stealing cars is not legitimate work. Prostitution is not legitimate work. You can't sanctify something that's sort of intrinsically evil, right? So let's just get that straight. And let's look at when people talk about work, it's always with this sort of degree of, it's yuck, working for the weekend, hump day, Wednesday, like you got to get up Monday, Tuesday, and then Wednesday, and then finally down we go to the weekend again, That whole thing of work is just being such a burden that we're just there for the 2 days out of the seven that that we enjoy ourselves. We make the money on the 5 days, so on the 2 days we can sort of enjoy the rest of our life, right? And that's just wrong, okay? So how do you turn... It's not an easy thing, turning work into prayer, but here are some ideas that you can all... You're free to sort of take these ideas, make up your own ideas about how you might sanctify your everyday work, okay? Every hour, for example, you might have like a little thing on your table that has every hour on a given day, and on a particular, 9 to 10 a.m. on a Monday morning, the hardest hour of the week, say, you say, I'm going to offer that work up for my mother who's sick, or for my friend who's going through a bad patch, or for the holy souls in purgatory, or whatever, And then you can divide your time up. And that difficulty of getting through that hour is turned into prayer, right? The interruption, you're sitting there, you're trying to meet this deadline, you're trying to get stuff done, and then someone interrupts you, and it's that irritating person from accounts who, does that stupid thing with their mouth, and it's like, man. And you just go, no, I'm just going to be good here, and I'll be civil and calm, and you offer that up for whatever intention for that day, okay? And the idea, you think about people you know, and you think, why do they actually work? What is their purpose in sort of going to work every day? For a lot of people, it's the money, paying the mortgage, whatever it is. Sometimes it's for pride. Some people, particularly people who are intellectually a bit gifted, they want to be the best orthopedic surgeon in the world, or win the Nobel Prize for economics, or whatever it is. And the thing that drives them is the thing of proving to the world how smart and clever they are, okay? Undermining someone, being particularly sort of evasive in politics or whatever it is. There's a whole range of motives that people have for working. But the real reason to work is to come close to God, to turn your work into prayer, so that every moment of your working day becomes prayer. Okay? So the value of work. The value of work, as I said, it's not its technical difficulty, it's not its creativity, it's not the amount of money, it's not the value of the work, it's none of those things. It's how it brings us to God. And St. Jose Maria Escrivá, who was the founder of Opus Dei, really brought this home in a couple of examples I'll give. Opus Dei runs a few universities around the place, and in the early days, it started a university in the north of Spain. And it's in a place called Navarre, in Pamplona was the main campus. Running of the Bulls, that city. And anyway, Navarre is like sort of hick countryville in Spanish sort of land. And it's nowhere near Madrid and Barcelona where all the action is. But St. Jose Maria said, look, we'll start it up there and it'll be good for that place and it'll help things along. And ultimately, over time, that university became quite prestigious. It's now got the top MBA school in Europe, and it's ranked in the top 10 in the world, just after Harvard and Stanford and these sort of places. So it's a prestigious sort of university. And the guys he sent up there were professionally very good. And so after about 10 or 20 years, the guys sort of came back to Madrid or Rome or wherever it was and said to him, hey, look, you know how you said we should go and do this university, you know, why don't you come and have a look, you know, because we've done this job and we think we've done all right and you should check it out. And so St. Jose Maria went to the university in Pamplona and was walking around, and they're very excited. You know, think about it, you're going to start a university. I mean, how many people do that? That's a lot of work. And so, you know, this building over here, you know, it costs this much money and we've got this and it's now producing these sort of people and this, you know, blah, blah, blah. And so Jose Maria cuts them off. He turns to them and he says, if you have not become closer to God in your work in creating this university, this entire university is a complete waste of time. An utter waste of time. You may as well have just not bothered. That's how seriously he took that message. Another example was, he talked about someone who cleaned the toilets at the university and someone who was a professor of economics or someone, like a top sort of academic sort of person. And he asked someone, which of these two people do you think does the most valuable work for the university? Which of those two people? And of course, there's that trick question where you go, oh, I think I know the answer, but I'm not really sure because I know it's a trick question. And he says, whichever of those two people do their work with the greatest love of God means that work is the most valuable. It's the idea of proximity to God. Things that are most proximate to God are the most valuable things. So if you do your work and you do it so that you're loving, it's bringing you close to God, and the professor of economics is just doing it to win the Nobel Prize, then that person who's doing that seemingly sort of valueless job is actually producing work of the most value. And I think that's a really good sort of idea of work and the value of work. And what happens when you take that attitude where you're trying to, and it's not easy, I talk about it better than I do it, but when you try and do that, what happens is that that idea of dull, monotonous days where it's just, you know, Groundhog Day, like, haven't I had this day like 300 times before? It's the same old thing over and over again. But when love is injected into those days where you're doing things primarily for love of God and to love God through other people, when that is happening, all of a sudden those days turn into something very, very different. Those days become very, very rich days, and you know, it becomes a completely different sort of outlook in terms of your world vision. So look, that was basically all I was going to say. That in a nutshell is the message of Opus Dei. It's about sanctification, of ordinary circumstances and sanctification of work.
That was Chris Caron with Sanctifying Your Work. The Finding Your Calcutta retreat was held at the Watersley Conference Centre in the Shoalhaven region. And for more talks, interviews and shows, visit cradio.org.au.